12:11. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman is your producer. This is John Williams. We'll be here until 1 o'clock. Tomorrow, Terry Savage, the financial columnist, is here answering your questions. If you can make it for that show and all of these shows, that's a little programming note for you. Answer your financial questions about your unemployment benefits and the stimulus packages and the market generally. Terry will do that tomorrow, and we'll get started this afternoon with John Najarian, the founder of MarketRebellion.com, and ask him about some of those same issues, too. John, thanks for joining us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thank you. I hope you and the audience are as well.
What's a stock or a couple of maybe sectors that you're interested in today? What's catching your eye?
Well, market's kind of flopping around a lot today. It was really all initially about the tech sector, which it's been all about the tech sector for most of this rally, but even more so today because the Dow was negative and the tech sector was actually moving pretty nicely to the upside. Now, that has the tech sector, that is, has flattened out. The NASDAQ is flat as a pancake right now, but the Dow is still down 224. So the big boost that we got out of Apple hitting an all-time high, Facebook hitting an all-time high, Amazon pushing to the towards $2 trillion in market cap. Not really, but it is nonetheless still just moving higher. Those are all the ones providing the big boost for those NASDAQ names. And the rest of the market just kind of blah.
I want to ask you about a couple of stories. One is in The Motley Fool, and they say that there's several reasons why a second stimulus will be passed in July. We've talked to you about that before. You're still bullish on that. You think they are going to pass the second stimulus round, right?
I do. I believe that both from the president's standpoint, that he would sign off on it because, of course, this is an election year.
Yeah.
And because a lot of these congressmen and women are getting back to their districts and seeing, you know, that it's really going to be necessary to carry the PPP through at least to the fall, if not longer.
You think it might be a compromise bill instead of $600? Maybe it's $400 or something like that?
It might be that exactly that. And you've seen McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, talking about finding ways for to more directly target the areas of the economy that do need that support more than others. And I'm sure that they will go through, you know, the dance, John, that you and I sadly have witnessed so many times before all of a sudden deciding, okay, I'm going to do it.
There is a bit of brinksmanship that you always tend to see. And then MarketWatch.com says that for all of this, global stocks will be higher 12 months from now. And then they list a variety of reasons. But that's good news, even though it might be a painful trip to get there. But overall, they think the markets will be at where they are now or higher 12 months from now. Do you believe that?
I do. I do, regardless of my outlook for the election, regardless of the earnings potential in the short term. I think earnings over the longer term here, especially in this TINA or there is no alternative space with interest rates as low as they are and going to stay there for a very long time, I think it's logical to see us higher a year and 2 years from now than where we are now.
And I'm sorry, John, do you feel that if a Democrat or a Republican is president, or if Democrats control the House or Senate, or the Republicans do, either way, you think the markets will still be as strong?
Yes. An ideal scenario would be a split Congress, regardless of who is the president. In other words, if Biden wins and it's a split Congress with the Republicans still retaining the Senate, then I think that would still be viewed as bullish because it would be more of a gridlock situation. If Biden were to be able to have enough momentum to carry others in with him and take over the Senate, I think the markets would take a very dim view of that. I'm not saying the markets are right, John. I'm just saying what traditionally they would do is sell very aggressively on that sort of an outcome. And then, obviously, there's that wild card, the president that's in the office right now. And if he continues to stay there, then the likelihood of significantly higher taxes is diminished dramatically.
John Najarian, founder of MarketRebellion.com, the financial news education subscription site. You can visit MarketRebellion.com. Nice to talk to you, John. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
So there are a few stories in the news today. The Sun-Times and Tribune both have significant stories about how this PPP loan program worked, how some people got in, some people did not. But the thrust of it isn't so much who got in and who didn't as who got how much. The Sun-Times headline is Oberweis Dairy, chaired by GOP House hopeful Jim Oberweis, got $5.6 million in a PPP loan. The Tribune says from museums and restaurants to law firms and supermarkets, thousands of Chicago-area businesses got PPP loans worth $1 million or more. And my question was, so is there a problem with that? The people that got $1 million, if they passed it along to their employees because they had so many employees, then is that a problem or what? And I remember that we visited not that long ago here on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Larry Chester, the founder and president of something called CFO Simplified. And he was pretty good on the PPP program. We asked him to join us again today. Hi, Larry. Welcome back.
Good morning, John. Or I guess it's afternoon now. How are you doing today?
Sure it is. Yep. I was on at 9. Here I am at 12:22 with you, and we're doing well. By the way, so for those who didn't hear our first conversation, just tell us what CFO Simplified does.
Provide part-time CFOs to small to mid-sized companies to help them with the financial services that large companies get from a full-time CFO, but we do it on a part-time basis, one day a week, one day a month, whatever their needs may be.
I've heard about this kind of industry. There are sales managers that can be used for hire the same way too, right? We just lost him. What do you know? We'll get him right back. Okay, so that's who he is and what he does. And so he has looked as closely as anybody at all of these different companies for their eligibility for PPP and what they should do. So we'll get him back on. Among the organizations that have taken the PPP program, the Brookfield Zoo, the Cubs sponsor Sloan Valve, I'm reading again from the Tribune, Willow Creek Church, Baird Warner, Vienna Beef, it's Pete's Market, Fresh Market, it's Encyclopedia Britannica, it's, who else is on the list of businesses? Home Run Inn, City Winery, Purple Pig. Some of them were criticized for taking it. Others, not so much. Okay, Larry, so that's what you do. What do you make of these headlines that are indicating that some of these firms got millions of dollars? Is that a problem or what?
Well, I think the program was originally intended so that companies had the money to be able to provide payroll to their employees so that their employees could live the way they normally live to be able to pay their rent and buy food and pay their utilities. I think if corporations and, you know, large corporations have cash flow problems just like small companies do. If large corporations or bigger companies are going to use that money to pay for covering their employees, then I think that's a good thing. I think if they're taking the money to cover operating expenses, I think that's, even though it's within the letter of the law, I don't think it's within the spirit of the law.
Explain that. How is that not in the spirit of the law? It's money in, it's money out, right?
Well, yes, but the CARES Act was originally put together to help companies survive, and the intent was to provide just exactly what the PPP says, a payroll protection program, to be able to allow companies to hire their employees back and pay them their pay up to a $100,000 cap so that they'd have enough money to buy food and pay their rent and live on an ongoing basis. Now, some companies have taken that money and have said, well, okay, what I want to do is use that money to cover operating expenses. The government's giving that to me on a 1% loan. I can't get a 1% loan anyplace else, so I'm going to use the money that way. And although that's within the letter of the law, I don't think that really is within the spirit of the law. I think the spirit of the law was to allow companies to hire people back. And I've had business owners who said to me, but I don't have anything for my employees to do, so why should I bring them back? But that's exactly what the PPP is for. It's the government giving you money so that you can pay your people in spite of the fact that you may not have anything for them to do.
Okay, but if you're a restaurant, there literally would be nothing for them to do. I mean, they couldn't even do busy work in the office. They couldn't go into those places of business. I guess here's my point. Are you suggesting that there are some businesses that should not have taken the PPP?
I don't know that I would say that there are businesses that should not have taken the PPP. I think the issue is what they're using the PPP for. Yeah. The calculation of how much money you can borrow on the PPP was based on what your payroll was during that period of time, during a marked period of time. So you were able to use 2.5 months of typical payroll from last year as a means of documenting what loan you would need to take. Now, if the government gave you $100,000 or $1 million based on what you told them your payroll expenses were going to be, and then you turned around and took that money and used it to pay for, you know, trucks, used it to pay for a building expansion, used it to pay for buying new equipment, I mean, does that really fall in with what the government had intended to give you the money for?
Evidently not, but in that scenario, would not the employer still have had to been paying his employees out of his own pocket, in other words?
Not necessarily. An employer is not required by any law to keep their people employed. The companies have been laying off people because they didn't have any business for them to do, any work for them to do.
But I thought that a high percentage of it, 75 or now 60% of that money, had to go to the employee payroll in order to be eligible for those PPP loans.
Well, no. I mean, you're correct with those numbers, 75% and 60%. But that's not based on giving the money to the company. That's based on the company getting forgiveness from the government. So in other words, if they used 75% of that money, and now 60% of that money, according to the current guidance, if they use 60% of that money to cover payroll, then they can get that loan forgiven. They don't have to pay it back. But they also could take that money and say, well, look, I'm not going to use this to pay my employees. I'm going to take it as a 1% loan, and I'll pay the government back sometime later with that interest. And they're not using that for their employees.
Okay. So it does fall within the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law. It sounds to me like a problem with the flaw in the law. Do we know then, when we're seeing these headlines about all of these companies, which are which are giving it to their employees, and which are just using it as a subsidized loan?
No, you really don't, because the PPP loan money is not really designated or required to be used for anything particular. The only thing that's really required is that the money being used for 60% payroll if you're going to get it forgiven. If the owner doesn't care about getting it forgiven, then he doesn't have to hire his employees back. And I just think that's not the right way of managing it from a business perspective.
Well, I understand that. I mean, sitting here right now, we don't have any way of knowing. And yet, I'm intrigued, if I may, that the Sun-Times, maybe that's a Democrat newspaper, and Jim Oberweis is not a Democrat. So their headline is, Oberweis Dairy, chaired by GOP House hopeful Jim Oberweis, gets $5.6 million PPP loan, and it begs the idea that that's inappropriate. I don't know how he's spending the money. He's got over 500 employees. Maybe he is giving it to the people that work for him. Is that a correct possibility?
Well, absolutely, that's a correct possibility. And the fact that the government has published the amount that companies have gotten for loans, I think is fully appropriate. That's documented in the CARES Act as a requirement. But there's no way of knowing what they're going to spend the money on until they do their forgiveness applications, and those forgiveness applications are accepted by the SBA. So it's quite possible, and, you know, I don't know one way or the other, but it's quite possible that Overweis is using all of that money to cover payroll and nothing else.
Or
and if he's using all of that to cover payroll, then isn't that within the spirit of the law and totally appropriate?
I get your point, but I think there's a lot of public shaming going on here for some of these businesses who now have to sort of justify it, and we don't know. Maybe it's fully justified, or maybe, in fact, he's taking it as the 1% loan and has no intention of hiring back ice cream scoopers. I don't know. But I think that's the intriguing thing about the coverage of this right now, is that while we don't know, it sure does look like they're passing judgment on these companies that are taking the money, Larry.
Well, I have to agree with you. I think it's an issue of how the public views things. And a lot of that is swayed by how the media present it. But the reality is that the government passed a law that allowed companies to borrow money from the government and use it for a variety of purposes. The primary purpose was to cover payroll. If they use it to cover payroll, then the loan will be forgiven. And it's not until those companies submit their forgiveness applications that we're really going to know what they used the money for.
Larry Chester is the founder and president of CFO Simplified. Visit CFOSimplified.com. Thanks for your expertise, Larry. We appreciate you joining us.
It's always great being with you, John. Thanks.
This is WGN Radio. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's our producer. This may be one of the drivenest summer vacations we have had maybe in your lifetime. There was a survey done by the folks at Clear Cover. To tell us a little bit about that, Ariana Gibson, the head of Driver Insights at Clear Cover. Visit clearcover.com. Ariana, it's John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the show. What does Clear Cover do? What are you all about?
Well, we are a tech startup that offers car insurance in 8 states and counting. And we use technology to be more efficient in the way we operate our business to help save customers money every day.
Chicago-based company, right?
We are, indeed.
So are you actually underwriting policies, or are you more like a broker finding the best policies for people?
That is a great question. So we are an insurance company. We launched as an MGA in California, but in all other states and now in California as well, we write our own on our own paper, and we are an insurance company.
So you're doing the same thing the big guys do.
We like to think that it's a little different, but yes, we are, for all intents and purposes, we are offering the same products at better prices and with some pretty excellent technology, because we were able to start from the ground up. So we were able to look at all of the things you need to do to be an insurance company and deconstruct it, and then say, how can we make each part of this process or each step in the process a bit more efficient, with the end result being that the money we save, we are able to pass on to customers.
You did a survey about people's driving habits or travel plans. Is that correct?
Yes, we did, about travel plans, and just trying to understand how COVID had affected people's plans for the summer, for vacations, and how they intended to travel.
What did you find?
A lot of interesting tidbits and a lot of interesting facts came out of it. I would say one of the sort of maybe not more shocking, but sort of biggest numbers that we saw was that of people who had planned a summer vacation, 75% of the people that we talked to canceled their flights in favor of traveling by car. So what we're seeing a tremendous amount of is people using their cars in different ways than they had anticipated before COVID, and perhaps in different ways than we had historically been doing otherwise. Plane travels is more efficient for some people and might have been a preference. Now we're seeing it sway and flip in the opposite direction, where people really are preferring to drive in their cars.
I have a friend who's in an RV right now, and if you had asked me in a million years, would she be driving an RV across the country, I would have said no. And there she is, posting pictures with her family at Niagara Falls, doing that kind of a vacation, you know?
Yeah, well, I'd say she's one of the lucky few. We hear that a lot of RV companies are sold out throughout the summer. What you hinted at is another thing that we found in the survey, this idea of where people were going. We wanted to understand if it was going to affect their destinations, and it certainly did. Less than 25% of people said they planned on visiting a major city, which is not common, but 63% said they want nature. So nature is in the summer. People want to be in rural destinations. I think there's a lot of stress going on, and people are looking for a bit of sense of, you know, serenity, security. There's a sense of control that comes with being, you know, in your own car. And 54% of people said they're going to take their vehicles, whether their own cars or an RV, to visit a national park.
Hmm. You also said something in the survey. More than half say they found themselves driving just to take a drive to escape quarantine. I presume you'd mean there not for vacation per se, but maybe just for an afternoon?
Absolutely. And it's kind of lovely when you think about this. It's a happy byproduct maybe of a difficult situation that people are finding joy in things that they might not have otherwise found joy in. So, you know, we usually have to think back to, for many of us, many decades ago when we first got our licenses and that feeling of freedom that came with driving. 66% of people said that driving offers them right now a sense of freedom or escape. And to your point, that 54% of people said they're driving just to drive. So, you know, people are in different situations. In Chicago, a lot of us are in smaller apartments, and so you just want to see open road. You know, some people are living in suburbs or different things, and it's just about changing your view and what you get to see. So getting in the car feels like a safe way to stay in a controlled environment where you're not exposed to too many elements, but just get to see different things and mix up your day a little bit.
I like the way you put that, a happy circumstance of this terrible situation, and so maybe people are discovering driving. I've realized that I'm listening to more music post-COVID now. I'm not watching sports as much as I used to. I found other ways to entertain myself. I'm reading more books than I used to. I've connected with more friends than I used to. Too bad I couldn't have got that memo pre-COVID, because it was available and will be after. But I'm one of those people who finds myself, my wife and I, sometimes driving for pleasure. But as an insurance company, I wonder if that's going to be a little problematic for the likes of you. Won't that mean more claims then?
You know, it could. I think it's just been a unique year in general. So when we think about, no one saw this coming, of course, and driving was significantly down in the first half of the year. So that affects things, because insurance, as you know, is all about understanding risk. So if you are not in your car, the certain risks are going to be lessened. What we found in the survey, though, was that while driving is increasing from the first half of 2020, while it decreased in the first half of 2020, it looks like in the second half, people are anticipating that they're going to drive about the same as they did in the second half of 2019, or a little more. So I think it feels severe right now because people stopped driving entirely. So any increase from nothing feels like something and fast. But overall, based on the survey results we got, it looks like people are going to be about the same. So we're not anticipating a huge lift in claims or incidents like that. But this is why we do this type of work. We want to understand people's changing behavior, what motivates them, what they're afraid of, and those kinds of things, because we truly believe that to be the best company for our customers, we have to understand them, and we have to understand what's going on in the market at large.
I have a last question, if you can give me a short answer. In general, where are people staying when they travel then by car? Are they preferring Airbnbs or hotels or motels or tents? I saw a thing about glamping, which is glamorous camping. What are people doing?
Yes, a great question. We in the survey, we learned that 59% of people said that they are less likely to stay in an Airbnb, and 58% said they're less likely to stay in a hotel. So camping is on the rise. RVs are on the rise. Glamping, if you can afford to do it, sounds really fun. But we definitely see that change. We just encourage people to call ahead, understand the rules and regulations of different hotels and the steps they're taking for sanitization, just to make sure you have that sense of security.
That's an interesting point. What a pleasant conversation. Ariana Gibson, Head of Driver Insights at ClearCover. Visit clearcover.com for insurance. Nice to talk to you, Ariana. Thanks for your time.
You as well, John. Thanks.
Have a good day. And we were looking at glamping online, and then you read the reviews, and one of the things that people were a little upset about was they said, okay, I'm going to go camping, but you promised me, like, you know, clean linens and warm running water, and some of those places aren't able to provide it. Hotels and motels along the way, too. They said, we will put, for instance, at a hotel we were checking out on an anticipated trip, we're not going to change your sheets and we're not going to give you your fresh towels, but we will put them in a sanitized bag out front, and you can do it, but everybody's safer that way. So it's maybe more encouraging to the traveler, but also it's a compromise for the traveler. It's also 1242, and Steve Bertrand has the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Mark July 15th on your calendar, if it's not already. That's when your tax returns are due. The state and federal government pushed back the filing deadline because of the pandemic earlier. About 15% of Illinoisans still need to file. Leasing firm Avalon has canceled another 27 Boeing 737 MAX jets. It had canceled 75 earlier this year. Boeing is test flying the revamped jets after two catastrophic crashes. And Amazon is planning to establish new locations of its conventional checkout store in Chicago, Seattle, California, and Washington, D.C. The Go Grocery concept is a larger version of the Go convenience stores that it began testing publicly in 2016. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Thank you, Mr. Bertrand. Now, Mr. Samuelson's got some agribusiness news. Hey-o.
Hello there, and while we may find the humidity and the temperatures uncomfortable, it's good weather for the corn and soybean crops in the Midwest. As a matter of fact, yesterday in the weekly report on crop conditions from the Department of Agriculture, 71% of the nation's corn crop in good to excellent condition, and the same numbers, 71% of the soybean crop in good to excellent condition. And this heat and humidity, as we've said several times, is the kind of weather that you can hear the corn crop growing, because the heat and humidity, particularly for corn, is coming into its high spots in tasseling season. That starts, really, it's underway now, and corn was certainly higher than knee-high by the 4th of July. But this weather is good for the development of the corn and the soybean crops. So I'm going to enjoy it, and I know a lot of farmers will, although some are beginning to run into a lack of moisture, but maybe the scattered showers will help that along. And from the standpoint of the prices today in the grain market, July wheat is up 2 cents a bushel, trading at 419.5. Or 491 and a half a bushel. July corn down 3 cents at 343 and a half. And the July soybean crop is down 3 cents a bushel, $8.95 and a half cents. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the July lean hog contract, trading down 30 cents a hundredweight at $44.85. The August live cattle contract down just 2 cents a bushel at the moment, but it just went to 75 cents lower, the per hundredweight at $100.05 per hundredweight. And the August feeder cattle contract is down $1.05 also at $135.10 a hundredweight. Well, the news we gave you yesterday, I'll repeat again today, because I'm still getting emails from people saying, did I hear you correctly? Yes, you did hear me correctly. For the first time in 130 years, there will not be a sandwich fair this year because of COVID-19. Board of Directors of the Sandwich Fair Association said, nope, no fair this year. It was scheduled to take place September 9 through 13 because it always starts the Wednesday after Labor Day. But fair officials said the fair will be scheduled for September 8 through 12 of 2021. And that's the story for so many county and state fairs, including the big events like the Farm Progress Show, Husker Harvest Days, and state FFA conventions, as well as the national FFA convention. That will be done virtually in October, without Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis being full of Blue Jacket FFA members. So the summer of postponements and cancellations continues, and we hope that it's the only summer that we'll have to put up with this kind of a mess. That's your money on 720 WGN.
It's 12:50. This is WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've spent some time today talking about the PPP programs, both for all of us and then the way businesses are using them, the first round and the second round. Amy Guth joins us, business reporter on WGN Radio, to kind of follow up on some of that. I'm thinking specifically about the stories about Delta, United, and the other airlines that are going to be using some of this stimulus money, Amy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think this the PPP topic right now is a huge one, and it's really fascinating to see, especially yesterday since that data was released, as people have had a chance to start going through it and see who benefited and, you know, what that looks like. So, yes, in terms of airlines, so U.S. Airlines have struck a deal with the Treasury Department for terms on various ways to borrow and various ways to get more funding. Now, there's about $25 billion for specifically to protect paychecks, and that there's part of that is, so initially Delta, United, JetBlue, Southwest, and Alaska, they have signed loans. Last week, right at the end of the week, we saw American, Frontier, Hawaiian, SkyWest, and Spirit. So those are most of the major carriers there. Of course, I watch United so closely since it's local. And just because they've struck this deal with the Treasury doesn't necessarily mean that they will tap that aid, but it means that it's available. So the Treasury didn't disclose exactly how much, but United had earlier indicated, probably back in late May or so, that it believed it could access about $4.5 billion with a B. So, you know, we'll see if the narrative from airlines kind of starts to change, because some airlines had even said, hey, there may be a possibility that we're going to have to come out with those, you know, legally mandated advanced notices about furloughs and layoffs in, you know, ahead of when the funding runs out in September. So we'll see what that looks like. You know, $4.5 billion is quite a bit of money. So, but airlines take a lot of money to run. I mean, when you start looking at the numbers of what they're losing per day, it's really pretty staggering. But I'm most interested to watch how this kind of changes the narrative from the airlines in terms of what their outlook is. They were kind of the first sector to say, hey, it's going to be a while, this recovery. It's not going to be this quick V-shape. It's going to be, you know, probably a couple of years before things are back to 2019 flying levels.
Well, I think a lot of people were upset that the airlines were not as generous with them as they were asking the government to be with the airlines. That is, you want a lot of money, but you don't want to give us forgiveness for tickets that we can't use or don't want to use because we're fearful of traveling. Are there any caveats with these loans? Are there any incentives with these loans for them to maybe not sell the middle seat or be as forgiving as they can with people who don't want to travel?
Yeah, I think that's the big question right now. There has been some legislation proposed. There was a bill that was introduced just right over 4th of July weekend from a representative in Oregon saying, hey, let's make it where you cannot sell that middle seat right now during this crisis, and really just make that a prohibited thing to do. We'll see how that plays out, you know, how that goes. Right now, the only real restriction on them is about that paycheck protection, that they can't make any big layoffs until after September 30th. But, you know, even that said, even once they first said that earlier on in the pandemic cycle, they kind of warned that with, and after September 30th, we don't know what's going to happen. So, you know, I think there a lot of eyes are on what happens in the fall with this. So that's why I think it'll be interesting to see how the airlines might change their narrative in terms of layoffs. You know, there's so many operational costs to running an airline. And in a moment when they're, because of travel restrictions, a lot of the international flights are just outright blocked. That's a big money-making, you know, adventure for them.
Sure.
So we shall see.
Maybe in part for that reason, I know Peter Greenberg was talking about it, the travel expert, the Eye on Travel host here at WGN Radio, Saturdays from 1 to 3, I think, is his show. Double-checking on that now. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's see. 10 to noon to 1. I think it's, 1 to 3 or 1 to 4. Anyway.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But Peter was talking a little bit about this, and he made it sound like it's almost certain that when that protection from the government comes, that the furloughs and the firings will happen. And he was talking about well-paid airline pilots as well as all throughout the system. The money won't be there, and so you're going to get another massive round of layoffs or furloughs. I don't know what the solution to that is, but it seems like it's almost inevitable, Amy.
Yeah, it does seem that way. You know, I think because the airlines have all in their earnings calls have all been talking about that date with great uncertainty. One, you know, United even at one point talking about it in terms of, I cannot guarantee that you will have a job after that point. I think yeah. United leadership was really pretty straightforward with workers about that one. So I think a lot of people are just kind of like waiting to see what happened, what their fate is after that time, which, you know, I'm sure is a really uncomfortable place to be in this moment in the airline industry as a worker.
Talk to me a little bit about Uber buying Postmates. What's the story here?
Yeah, this is really interesting. So Uber lost out a bid for Grubhub, which I believe you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. Grubhub ended up being bought by Just Eat Takeaway, which is based in Europe, and a $7.3 billion deal. But now Uber has bought Postmates in a $2.65 billion all-stock deal that was announced yesterday. And that's a really interesting move to me because Uber's already got Uber Eats, so it's kind of got the food delivery business down. Postmates opens them to a lot of other stuff. They're calling it the essentials category. Because you think about the things people order from Postmates, that's liquor, that's drugstore things, that's, you know, health and beauty kind of things. That's a lot of other household goods. And so this is a really big move from Uber, and for $2.65 billion, that's a humongous market. We've seen the delivery game really change and a lot of focus go onto it this year because fewer people are going out, more people are ordering their things rather than going to the store. So what it's shaping up to really seem like is this very upping the ante of this very fierce competition in the delivery game. But, you know, this gives Uber the ability to deliver just about everything you could possibly want to your home. Yeah. You know, so that makes them suddenly a much more powerful company with this in their back pocket.
And I think the number that people are interested in is then what is the charge to the customers and what's the nick to the restaurants? And if this drives those numbers down, I think people would react favorably to that.
Yeah, that's right. Because a lot of restaurants came out with their own delivery service saying, hey, this 30% margin some of these delivery services are taking, it's too much. We can't do that. We can't survive. Restaurants have about a 3-5% profit margin anyway in the best of times. So this year, that's why we've seen a lot of restaurants really hurting. So if you're a restaurant owner, the idea of giving away such a big margin is really not very appealing. So that's why a lot of restaurants have said, you know what, we're going to build our own delivery infrastructure and let people just order directly from us. So I think this is a really interesting move from Uber and their ability now to be able to deliver so many different things to customers.
Amy Guth follows business. Thanks, Amy. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks, John.